Welcome to Anchorage Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Anchorage Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you for joining us. Our guests tonight are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet, Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News, and via phone from Fairbanks, Dermot Cole of the Fairbanks Daily News Miner. This show will, in the most part, be devoted to the legacy and record of Senator Ted Stevens, who was killed in an airplane crash in Southwest Alaska just a few days ago. Before we go into Senator Stevens' record and legacy, however, I'd like to express my condolences and those of my colleagues to the families of those who died. You're in our thoughts and in our prayers. Paul, the story has been evolving since the plane crashed. We've learned a lot more in the last couple of days than we knew in the first hours. What's the state of the investigation, the state of the story right now?
Well, in general, the NTSB investigators have been finally to the crash site and have pulled back. The NTSB, when it does a crash investigation, has separate teams to deal with weather, to deal with avionics, to deal with different things. They go out and some are interviewing witnesses, and they're in that process right now. They'll gather information probably, I don't know, until they're done, I suppose, and then they'll move on, and the board itself will make a determination sometime in the future.
And these things are not done in a hurry. They're done a lot with a lot of care and double and triple checking.
NTSB has a reputation for being meticulous, I think, and I think you can see that as they start to work in how they break down the task. It's a daunting task to try to find out after the fact why an aircraft crashed, for crying out loud. These guys could do a very good job, piece together the information and the parts, and they can.
On the other hand, they know a lot about specific aircraft.
They know a lot about aircraft.
And the history of what's happened.
That's true. If I could add something too to that, Mike, what they'll do is they'll recover the airplane, the entire airplane. They'll get every bit, every piece that they possibly can, including, of course, the engine, which will be very important. They're going to take it to a hangar in Dillingham once they're able to lift it out of the tundra. They'll reconstruct this. They'll send the engine down to the manufacturer, which I believe in this case is made by Honeywell, and they'll reconstruct that engine to see if
And they've done this with jet planes that have crashed in the ocean.
Oh, yeah.
Where they've gone to great depths of the water to bring them out.
That's right. And there's no black box on this. It's going to have to be just good forensic work, good investigative work, and the NTSB is very good at its job.
Steve, as a matter of television, I noticed that CNN and some of the other networks, but CNN in particular, used a lot of file footage of Senator Stevens. Mm-hmm. The beginning, there wasn't much video except file footage. Yeah. How did this story unfold for Channel 2, and how did you go about covering it for television?
There was a call. We got a couple of anonymous calls to the news department saying that there's been a plane crash.
This would have been the night of Monday night.
Monday night. And as we got these anonymous calls, there were also additional bits of information that were passed on that we think that Senator Stevens is on the airplane. So we all started making phone calls. The staff all started making phone calls. And I got to tell you, I got to give total kudos to my staff. It's a great staff. I was in Denali National Park at the time in the backcountry, totally cut off from what was going on. I didn't know about it until Tuesday when I just happened to venture close to the front of the park where there's cell phone service, and then my phone started going crazy. But the staff got the phone calls, started checking things out, and was able to confirm that, yes, indeed, he was on the airplane. And at first, of course, we had no idea what condition he or the other passengers were in at that particular point. So, you know, Alaska, as we all know, is a huge place. It's very remote. It's hard to get to places. And we've tried to be equipped at Channel 2 over the years for such situations where we're in remote places, which is
quite
often.
One of the things I found out in dealing with some of the national media, it wasn't exactly like this, but it was more like, in this direction, where it was sort of, could you just, you know, take your car and go over to Dillingham and then file a story.
That's happened throughout the years. And I think we've talked about, you know, we've made fun of network producers on this show before. But, I can remember a fuel spill at the old naval station, I think, out at ADAC. Oh. And a producer from New York calling me and saying, can you get down there? Can you get down there and cover it? Well, no, we can't. Well, why not? And they got all indignant at me because we wouldn't do this. We'll take the Aleutian Highway south and get off at the ADAC exit. Sure, we can do
There's
that.
There's a big sign. line.
We'll be back in 15 minutes. Yeah. First of all, it's over 1,000 miles away. It's a naval station. They just don't let you walk out there. So yeah, there's a real lack of knowledge. Some might call it
one thing
ignorance
I wondered
Alaska.
About here, Steve, is frequently, in fact, it's very common. Stories will change. The beginning story you get is significantly different than what develops later on. Now, obviously, the plane crash, that's a fact.
Right.
But did this story have some changing elements as things unfolded?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you start... This isn't like one of those crime shows on TV where everything's solved in an hour. And we don't go out and have endless speculation about what may have happened. We try to stay away from that. I think all the news organizations up here have tried to stay away from that. We just deal with the facts as the NTSB knows them. We try and talk to our witnesses. And it's going to unfold as they get more information. Now, this is obviously a very high-profile situation. The NTSB is very much aware that people are keenly interested in what's going on.
High expectations.
And as Paul said, they'll do their very best to make sure that this is done right, that this is done meticulously, and they'll also try and dispense with as many facts and bits of information that they possibly can so people are kept up to date.
Okay, let's get Dermot Cole in here. Dermot, you've covered Ted Stevens for more than 30 years at the Fairbanks Daily News Miner. I'm not going to ask you exactly how many days and years, but could you tell us, we know Senator Stevens got his start in Fairbanks. Could you tell us about his early days in Fairbanks and something about how the community of Fairbanks has reacted to his death in this plane crash?
Well, you know, Wally Hickel used to say that he arrived in Alaska with 37 cents and Ted Stevens tried to do one better by saying he arrived in Alaska $600 in debt.
And it was 52 below, right?
Yeah, well, he and his wife, Ann, had borrowed $600, and they arrived here in early 1953 in a 47 Buick. And Stevens quickly established himself in the Fairbanks area as an attorney. He had come to work for a law firm here. And one thing led to another, and Mike, you're very familiar with his early career as a prosecutor. He became the U.S. attorney in Fairbanks, which was kind of unusual considering he had so little experience. But he had good connections. He was smart. He worked hard, and he made quite a name for himself. In fact, in later years, there were all these somewhat exaggerated stories about him being the prosecutor who carried a gun everywhere and went on raids,
I heard it was two guns. Maybe it was three.
Oh, yeah. Several. Anyway, but Ted did say, Senator Stevens did say that he, at least on one raid in Delta, he did carry a gun, and that the, sort of the legend sort of spread from that. But after that early part of his career as an attorney, he was close friends with C.W. Snedden, who was the publisher of the News Miner. And Snedden had connections with Fred Seaton, who became the Interior Secretary. And through this, Stevens ended up going back to Washington, D.C., where he lobbied for Alaska statehood in the late 50s. And then after that, he came back to Anchorage and served in the legislature and then later in the Senate. In terms of, people have been around Fairbanks a long time. Many of them knew Senator Stevens personally, and his death is being felt in it's really a period of mourning for many of these people. Most of them are all significantly younger than he was, but they looked up to him and admired him. And they sort of regard the whole corruption trial as something that many of them are trying to forget, I think. That's not really foremost in people's minds, at least in the discussions I've been hearing and what people have been saying.
I was going to mention that I ran into Senator Stevens one time. He had picked a new federal judge, and the federal judge he picked was from Fairbanks. And he said, I got all these letters, they piled up on my desk, they're all from Anchorage, saying, why would you pick anybody from Fairbanks? What's the matter with you? And he said, I had to tell these people, I got my start in Fairbanks. I owe Fairbanks a lot. But let's go to Paul Jenkins. Paul, we're touching on it here just a little bit, but the legacy. Can you tell us something about Senator Stevens' legacy?
It's difficult to know.
40 years in the United States Senate.
40 years in the United States Senate. In 1958, he was working to working for statehood, working as a counselor at the Department of the Interior. In his farewell speech in 2008 to the Senate, he said, we were then a little more than an impoverished territory, or more of an impoverished territory than a full-fledged state. And over the years that followed that, there were countless legislative successes he had. There is the Alaska Native Land Claims Act. There's Trans-Alaska Pipeline Authorization Act. And you follow that up with the Magnuson-Stevens Act. And all of these were beyond just legislation. They formed Alaska into what it is today. During that speech, he also said, Alaska was not Seward's folly and is no longer an impoverished territory. I think if there's a legacy, that's it. We're sitting in a building. He probably had a hand in...
he was a very vocal advocate of public broadcasting.
Public broadcasting. So, you're hard-pressed in the state to stand anywhere and look and see a structure and not have his fingerprints on it. It's he was Alaska.
Yeah, very well said. Steve, I've repeatedly gotten questions from outside, and it's sort of implicit on some of the reporting you see on the networks and in the Times. Question of what do Alaskans think about the corruption conviction in retrospect? How would you summarize that? And again, Dermot touched on this a little.
Yeah, I think Dermot's probably right on this. I think that people will try and forget it. I think once, it's unfortunate, it's an event like this where you take stock of a person's life, but we're doing that now. And I think when people realize, especially newcomers to the state, they'll realize just what he did mean to Alaska. I frankly can't imagine an Alaska without Ted Stevens. I've been here since 1981, and it's been Ted Stevens this and Ted Stevens that, and just the incredible amount of work that he did. And you're right, his fingerprints are on every single major event that took place in this state for the last 40 years and before that.
His name has been in the newspapers as long as I have been able to read a newspaper.
Yeah, yeah.
It's getting to be a while. Dermot, did you want to add something there?
Yeah, I just sort of along those lines, Mike, the very first edition of the Juneau Empire after Alaska entered the Union in 1959 had a little front page story on it that said, Theodore Stevens gets promotion. This was a new job, different job he had in the Interior Department. But I just, you know, now I think you were reading back in 1959, but
I was in high school. I hope so.
Yes, I would like to sort of echo what Steve and Paul said. He's had a great impact on all sorts of things around the state, things that are too numerous to mention: bypass mail, broadcasting, health and safety, water and sewer projects. You name it. This might be a little bit, it's hard to summarize that corruption investigation, but I mean, personally, I think what happened was he was careless, at least. Was that widespread corruption, money exchanging hands in large quantities? No, I don't think that happened. I think this was I see it as largely a paperwork violation caused by carelessness somewhere along the line. Not what people think of as corruption.
Right. Once again, I'm Michael Carey. I'm here with Paul Jenkins, Steve McDonald, and Dermot Cole, who's joining us from Fairbanks. Steve, perhaps some personal reflections on your meetings with Senator Stevens in the newsroom or on the campaign trail or at political events.
Boy, there are so many. One of my fondest memories would have been in 1992, someplace around
there. Sure, it wasn't 1892.
No, it wasn't 1892. And 1992, my oldest daughter Heather and I went back to Washington, D.C., and we went to see him. And here's a 7-year-old who was quite taken by him. He was this nice, doting fella who bought her ice cream in the Senate dining room. And we have the photograph and everything else with him. And she remembered, when she's like 7 and a half. laugh, oh, you know, name dropping Senator Stevens, right, in her second grade class or whatever. But I remember him. He was very kind. He was very gentle. He was really outgoing to kids. He always took kids in terms of bringing them in and talking to them and being respectful of kids. That's the one thing I always remember. He always seemed to want to teach.
I've seen him say, are you listening to your mother?
Yeah. Then I can remember the Senator Stevens, where if you asked the question and you didn't have your facts right, he would rip your head off.
Or you didn't have his version of the facts.
Oh, no, yeah. His version of the facts. He has, I've been the target of some of his tirades from time to time in news conferences. Thankfully, I can remember one of my colleagues really getting nailed in because she had inflated a number accidentally, and he just went after it. But afterwards, after he had vented and he got his piece out, you know, he kind of would, okay, do you understand better that, you know, okay, the person was shell-shocked. One of my better ones, he called me by the wrong name during a news conference one time. He called me Dan. He was thinking of another guy on another TV station. And three
we
or four
know who
different
that
times,
is.
Right, he called me Dan. And I thought, okay, I'm not going to correct the senator in this news conference. So I just kind of like, okay, I'm Dan for the next so many minutes. And then, because he had this person, he was supposed to meet with this person after the news conference about some sort of personal matter or whatever it was, but he had Dan on his mind. Dan was a TV guy. I had a TV camera, so I'm Dan. And when the whole thing was over, he was yelling for, where is Dan here? Is Dan around? Where's Dan? And my photographer kept saying, I think he means you. I said, pack up the gear. We're getting out of here, you know? So we left. So Sheila Toomey, who is the author of The Ear and the ADN, called the newsroom, and I happened to be out at that time, and she talked to a colleague of mine, and I had gone back, and I just said, you know, you call me Dan, and do you think after all these years I've been covering him, he would know my name by now? Well, my colleague relayed that comment onto Sheila, and it wound up in the Ear the next week, right? About 3-4 days later, I get this letter from the U.S. Senate, you know, and it's an apology note from Senator Stevens, you know. So it was he was very thoughtful, and I certainly understood that. But he was thoughtful, he was kind, and he could really rip you a new one.
As when he got into the Hulk mode, Dermot,
right.
The New York Times is reporting that senators, congressmen running, seeking re-election in this round of elections are having a tough time if they're known as the guys who can bring home the bacon, the guys who've stood up for earmarks, the people who have taken the federal treasury home. Do you think that this is something that might catch on here in Alaska, or is this just something that's alien to us?
Well, Mike, it might catch on if we have short memories. You know, Alaska still depends more heavily on the federal government than just about any part of the country, except perhaps for Virginia. And so, you know, I don't see that as being a big item here. Hey, I might want to add something to what Dan said there, and that is just two quick things. In 1980. The Democratic Party in Fairbanks wanted to make Ted Stevens an honorary Democrat because he was supporting Clark Greening in the primary against Mike Revelle. And I think Stevens declined that offer. He didn't want to become an honorary Democrat. And sort of in a totally unrelated thing about terms of the Stevens temper, I looked this up the other day. He was on Nightline in 1995 or 96 with Bruce Babbitt, and he said he was either lying or not telling the truth 12 times. In the short interview, kept saying, "You're lying! You're lying!"
And what did Bruce Babbitt say?
Well, he, you know, sort of said that no, he was telling the truth, etc. But you know, Stevens had that ability to argue vehement with people and then have a civil discussion with them, which is why you know Senator Inouye of Hawaii is his best friend, and he was also friends with Ted Kennedy, and you know they didn't agree on much. And finally, let me just throw one other thing in there in terms of personal connections. My son was, like many other young people in Alaska, was one of the interns with Senator Stevens in high school, or right when he got out of high school. And what he told me afterwards was how impressed he was that Stevens spent a day with each of the kids as they went around, and that he couldn't believe how many subjects the guy was involved in a given day. This is somebody who really worked hard for Alaska. You know, you could disagree with him on certain things, right? But nobody can deny that he worked extremely hard for his whole life.
Paul, briefly.
You know, he had no peer as a legislator, as a lawmaker. But I think the stories I'm hearing now are from regular people, ordinary people with ordinary problems who would see him get on the airline flights and move to the rear of the plane, refusing to sit in first class. Or he would come to them in the airport and just start chatting with them, and they didn't quite know what to do. You know, this guy's so important. What was he talking to me for? The only his temper was legendary, but he handled me with kid gloves one day. I walked up. I was with AP. I was much younger, and I thought, well, I'll just stick this guy. Watch this, you know. So I asked him some loaded question, and he looked at me, and he reached up, and he patted me in the arm and started laughing and walked off. And I felt like I was like about this tall, you know.
Nice try.
You had one more story, and then...
I think of him as a politician from a bygone era that he was a true statesman. Yeah, he had that temper, and yeah, there was that corruption investigation and things like that. But I really do think he was a political statesman and a part of a dying breed. I don't think there's a lot of folks like him that exist anymore. He could argue vehemently for a cause that he truly believed in, and he truly believed in his causes. But then afterwards, he could maybe go out and have a drink with the people he argued with.
And late in his career, some of the people who were causing the most problem were in his own Republican caucus.
That's true. He butted heads with John McCain quite
regularly. Yeah, that's true, all the time.
Yeah, but I just think that he was one of those guys who could say his piece on the Senate floor and then move on. And he did reach out across the aisle, and he did try to form those kinds of alliances. And it wasn't take no prisoners kind of politics that you see now.
Thanks, Steve. I'm going to tell a couple of stories, step down and become a panelist and tell a couple of Stephen's stories. One of the things that stuck with me is that during the impeachment impeachment proceedings against Bill Clinton, Senator Stevens voted against impeachment. And his explanation of that was interesting. He said simply, "I know what it means to be human." And I think that that was very true, and that he knew the breadth of experience of the human race, and he also knew his own limitations and what he'd gone through in his own experience. I also wanted to mention that once upon a time I was invited, he invited me to go to breakfast with him. I wanted to interview him for a story I was doing, a Fairbanks story, a murder story, which Ted had been the investigator and prosecutor. And I thought, you know, this is not a good idea going to a restaurant because I'm pretty sure I know what's going to happen. And it did. We sat down, we ordered, and the supplicants began to line up, his constituents, who had an idea. Mind you, it was good for Alaska. They were not doing it for themselves. Right. It was going to be good for their state, for our state, and they wanted to impress upon Senator Stevens the goodness for our state. They just needed one thing to make it work. That was federal money. And I felt I was sitting at the table with a frontier fertility god who had the power in the use of one word to change people's lives. And that word was yes, if he said yes to these projects. And, you know, Stevens did not say yes or no in those meetings or at that breakfast. What he said was he had a nice young man. He always traveled with a nice young man or a nice young woman who wrote everything down and then would get back to the person. I don't know if any of these were... paid for, federal money became available for them. I often wondered, you know, does Ted Stevens get tired of being asked all the time for money? I mean, because it became, no matter what he gave people, if you want to look at it that way, or appropriated for people or obtained for people, people were always going to ask for more. And there's a great story about him, which I can only tell in part, I have to tidy it up a little bit, about a businessman or a corporate leader came to him and said, listen, you know, I really need help. And it was with either a regulatory agency or the White House, the Clinton White House, where, you know, Ted Stevens would be treated respectfully, but that wasn't the top of their list of taking care of Ted Stevens. And so the businessman kept pushing it, but Ted on this regulatory matter before the White House or this regulatory agency. And finally, Stevens exploded and said, listen, Bob, you got to understand, I'm a senator, not a magician. And that was sort of, you know, in the end, what he would have to lay that down on people. You know, go ahead.
Just real quick, what you had said, did he ever get tired of always
talking? Supplicants.
Yeah. I don't think he ever did. If he did, he certainly never said it or showed it to us. I think he was a devoted public servant. And there were two things, I think, that point to this. And I'll quickly make the point. if he had won this last election against Mark Begich, he would have told you the day after the election, yeah, I'm going to run again in 6 years. He was devoted. He wanted people to know that he was their senator and he planned to have that job. I asked him one time, why did Frank Murkowski lose to Sarah Palin in that August primary 4 years ago? And he said he delayed. Frank Murkowski delayed telling people that he wanted to serve another term. He acted like he didn't really want the job. He says, you got to tell people if you're in public service, you got to let them know you want that job, and he should have come right out at the very beginning and said.
Dermot Cole, let's get you back in here for a final commentary. Anything you want to add about Ted Stevens based on what you heard, or do you want to go on and tell us a little bit about the current campaign? After all, we have an election coming up soon.
Well, Mike, the current campaign seemed to be placed on hold at least until next week after those services. And I guess the closing thoughts I would have would be, I, like you, express my condolences to the other victims in that crash. The real tragedy for those young people, those young families, that's just really heartbreaking in many ways. And finally, it's a little bit strange and odd, and I don't know what to make of it, but that Stevens is known throughout the country by many people as the internet is a series of tubes guy is really kind of
that and
bizarre.
The Bridge to Nowhere, which was more or less Don Young's idea. I don't think it was particularly associated with him.
Well, yeah, it's just bizarre. That's just not really a fair summation of his life.
I would say, though, in fairness to the national media, there's some really good reporting in the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times and a very good obituary in the Washington Post for those of you who have time and access to them. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week on Anchorage Edition.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Anchorage Edition at anchorageedition@kakm.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Anchorage Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.